Welcome to the Tour Life Podcast from Well Better Best. I'm Janine, your host, integrative nutrition health coach and personal trainer. In the past 10 years, I've had the privilege of meeting some of the most interesting and hardworking professionals in the music industry. Whether you are a fan of live music or someone who actually puts on the shows, you'll find some great stories, advice, and encouragement to live a happier, healthier life doing what you love. Today's guest is a tour manager, production manager, and audio engineer who has worked with artists such as Animal Collective, Bonnie Raitt, Fiona Apple, Nas, and My Morning Jacket, among many others. In this episode, we discuss the importance of surrounding yourself with people who inspire and encourage you, as well as how practicing self-awareness, empathy, and acceptance can help you lead a sustainable life and career. You can find him on Instagram at RealRealPaulDalen. Here is my conversation with Paul Dalen. Paul, thank you so much for joining me on the Tour Life Podcast. I'm so excited to hear your story. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks so much for the invitation. I'm really excited to be here. You've had such great guests on the podcast, so happy to be included.
Oh, thank you. It's such a pleasure to be able to talk to so many amazing people with amazing backgrounds and amazing presence too. So could you start by telling us a little bit about how you even got started in the music industry? Was this something that you always knew you wanted to do, or did it just happen?
Sure. Well, you know, going all the way back to like preschool, well, okay, elementary school, I grew up in the era when the Beatles first came to prominence. And, you know, it was another time when there weren't a lot of sources of entertainment. And music in my generation was really, I mean, that was kind of it. That's what we had. And I saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, and I was really beguiled, because I truly am that old, that I saw them live on Ed Sullivan, and became really interested in music and was really fascinated by what was going on. And then a few years later, they came to my hometown of Kansas City, and my parents, God bless them, took my brother and I to see the Beatles. So the first live show I went to was in when I was in the second grade. So it left a big impression, as you can imagine. And as I got older, I taught myself to play guitar. I was in bands through high school and after high school. The band I was in after high school broke up, and this was in Lawrence, Kansas. And there was one band in the region that had a recording contract, and we had the same manager prior to my band breaking up. And they needed a sound engineer. And the band was called Morningstar, and they were opening for Styx. So because I knew a little bit about sound, but I didn't know enough to know how little I knew, if that makes sense. I didn't really know how ignorant I was. I kind of fearlessly just went in and started mixing this opening act in arenas with very, very little in the way of skills, you know, to really qualify me to do that. So that's how it got started. And then it just kind of rolled on. I mean, it was almost like a default thing. It's like, oh, I'm earning a living on the tech side of music. And I was off and running.
Yeah, it's super interesting how that fearlessness of not really knowing what you're doing tends to kind of work out sometimes. So how did it feel? Like, did you recognize that at some point you're like, oh, wait, I don't actually know what I'm doing? And how did you deal with that?
Oh, wow. What a great question. I think in a perfect world, those things evolve concurrently, that as your knowledge increases, your knowledge about your lack of knowledge increases. So with luck, if life affords you the opportunity to keep those two things in sync, you can continue to move forward. So I wasn't paralyzed at any point by the fear of saying, oh my gosh, I am so far in over my head. Or if I was, I had like the hubris of youth and I just carried on. But on top of that, everybody around me was really, really kind and helpful and encouraging. So even though there were times in that situation, and probably in many other situations as I moved along, where it was clear that I was maybe in a little over my head, people were encouraging. They were helpful. So I kept going.
It's amazing how so much of our success can really be traced back to the interactions that we had with those people who popped up into our lives that gave us that encouragement and allowed us to take those chances because we knew that we had somebody to back us up.
It's really true. We had encouragement, or we were able to just watch people that were more qualified than we were, or than I was, and learn from them. And I try to remember too, there were people that made mistakes and did things poorly that I learned from as well. And you know, and my path wasn't without hiccups and bumps in the road. But the idea is, if we're fortunate and if we're of a particular personality type, that we learn from whatever we're presented with.
Yeah, that definitely speaks to that growth mindset that I always love to talk about, especially being a teacher by trade. It's scary to do things when all you think about is the potential failure. But when you see it from a lens of growth and opportunity, and those challenges can actually be something that takes you to the next level, I think it kind of just switches the way that you approach things in all aspects of life.
Absolutely. And we all have different levels of risk tolerance. We know that, whether, I mean, in every way, in every walk, in every part of life, in every facet of life.
You have a really long career and you did a lot of things with festivals, which I think is really interesting. How did you get involved in the production side of all of these festivals? Was it something you were doing alongside working with individual bands?
Yeah, you know, because I've been doing this such a long time, I've had a few different parts of my career. One starting as a the sound engineer for this local band that I was telling you about that opened for Styx. Then I got hired by Styx to be what we used to refer to as a guitar roadie, so a backline tech. I did that for a minute with both Styx and Robin Trower. Then I went back to Kansas City and worked for another band and became their tour manager in front of house engineer. And then I had a very, very long career, almost entirely as a front of house engineer. Occasionally, I would also be a production manager. So most people that tour for some period of time, assuming they're curious by nature, they acquire a certain amount of knowledge and skills about other departments. I mean, unless they really are just completely enamored of what they do and nothing else. You know, you watch other people work. And I think I could be described as curious. So I would ask rigorous questions and I would understand truck drivers and what a forklift operator did and how, and just, you know, try to gain a general knowledge. So from touring as a front of house engineer, eventually I wanted to stop touring in the 90s. I was living in San Francisco. I went to work for the promoter in San Francisco, Bill Graham Presents. I was hired as the production manager at the Fillmore in San Francisco. And then in relatively short order was the production manager at both the Fillmore and the Warfield, and then did some other shows around town. I did that for a while. In 2000, I went into artist management. I moved to New York. I did artist management for, I don't know, maybe 8 or 10 years. First with a really, really great company called Main Road that managed, just a really amazing selection of artists, including David Byrne and David Bowie, amongst many others. Then I started my own management concern, and that was really great. But eventually that kind of petered out, and I kind of had to figure out what I was going to do to pay the bills. And I thought, well, I guess I'll go back to touring work. My friend Haddon Hipsley, who runs Lambda Productions, who is a production coordinator, head of production for a lot of big festivals, kind of called out of the blue, perfect timing, right when I was trying to get my feet back on the ground work-wise, and asked if I was interested in being a stage manager at Bonnaroo. And I did that. And that led to a period of about 5 years where I was doing a lot of festivals every summer and then doing some touring work in the non-festival season.
I can very clearly see, like you mentioned, that there's different chapters in your life. And a lot of these chapters, I think, that we see in our lives are triggered usually by some sort of event or, you know, something takes it to a close where you end up having to pivot. I see that a lot of people, as I'm sure you've noticed, are going through that right now. And I feel like we are going through it as a collective in the world. How have the pivots and the different transitions into new chapters of your career helped you deal with our current situation with the pandemic?
It's very interesting. You know, anybody that's been a freelancer for any period of time has to have a certain ability to deal with uncertainty, change, and all the different elements of those two things. So as a freelancer, quite often you don't know what your next bit of work is going to be. And if you're lucky and you're successful, and then there's also fate, of course, and one job rolls into another job, rolls into another job. I guess really I should just be speaking about myself. I was able to develop a certain amount of faith that things were going to work out work-wise, you know, on the work front. And they generally did. So, and plus we work in a business. Anybody that's in, on the touring side of things, there's a lot of unpredictability, uncertainty, unforeseen circumstances. And as a tour manager, I'm sought after and rewarded for being able to take those situations and keep everything pointed in the right direction. So the ability to be hyper-vigilant in a mindful and calm way and be prepared for any eventuality and then not be easily flustered when something that I haven't anticipated happens, that's a large part of what I do. As a tour manager and as a production manager as well. So I feel that I was pretty well equipped to deal with what we're going through now in COVID. And, you know, some of the guests that you've had on recently have spoken very interestingly and eloquently about that, about what it's meant. I mean, I was as thrown as anybody was, and it did take me a minute to decide, if you will, or realize, I guess, or accept that this circumstance of the lockdown and unemployment and so many fundamental changes to what I do professionally and also what that means to my personal life, that this wasn't something to be tolerated. Eventually, I had to say, this is a thing. This is a thing that I can, if I am able to and willing to, that I can embrace. And that's made it a whole lot easier to see it as an opportunity. I know that's a little Pollyanna-ish, and it's certainly easier for those of us that aren't struggling to put food on the table for one reason or another. But I am fortunate that I have that opportunity to go, okay, well, what am I going to do with this? This isn't going to come around again. I mean, with luck, it isn't. So it's an opportunity.
And that resilience that I think is built from practice, do you think that's a trait that you had, or do you think that's a trait that you developed over time through the nature of your job?
Again, that's a really great question. That, like so many things in life in general, inside and out of work, we might have genetic predispositions. We have family history. We have historical things that we bring with us. We have the wiring of our brain. We have our amygdala and how it responds. We have so many things that we bring with it. And then, as you suggest, we can practice certain things that can help us be better at particular tasks, at tolerating unexpected circumstances, at processing maybe difficult experiences we've had. So it really is a combination, I think, of nature and nurture. You know, we come with who we are, and then what skills do we acquire or circumstances do we encounter that allow us to, I wouldn't say grow out of it, but grow with it. Accept it.
Was there a particular time in your life where that really made sense, where you would consider it like a formative situation in your life?
There's no one thing that jumps out at me as a particular moment, but there have really been quite a few, perhaps less sexy or less dramatic stories, but situations where I saw the path and I took it. And quite often early in my career, I saw a desire for a path and I created it. Somehow I pursued it. I went after it. I decided I wanted a job, or I wanted a certain situation, or I wanted to be somewhere. And I had a certain determination and tenacity, and that's great. And it's effective. But then there's also an element that perhaps is more in play as I've gotten older, of trying to be aware and accepting of what is and figure out where I fit in that and how I can best fit with as little strife and struggle as possible. That's not to suggest just taking the easy way out, not at all, but say, I can see this path in the road, and I think I would like to take some steps down that road. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, and that actually really, really clicked for me, because in my life, I feel that I've often kind of looked at it, and I don't know if today I could say it was like a good or a bad way to look at it, but I've looked at a lot of the choices that I've made as taking the path of least resistance. But it's usually always aligned with, you know, the easy way out. I think that's what most people look at it right off the bat. But I think the way that you put it makes a little bit more sense about being able to see what the situation is, being able to see how you fit into it, what things are drawing you in a certain direction without you having to force it necessarily. Is that sort of what we're talking about?
Yeah. And as you were speaking, I was thinking of this too. You know, it's not a matter of just taking the first opportunity that you see. That's not what I was suggesting. What I was thinking about was seeing a road forward and then making a mindful decision. This is where I belong, or perhaps it isn't. I mean, it isn't as if I've taken every single job that's ever been offered every time the phone rings, but circumstances change. And sometimes I have taken things that I didn't imagine or anticipate, or perhaps not even be that psyched about. But they were the right thing to do at the time. But what I was really referring to was like seeing roads, seeing opportunities, and then with mindfulness and hopefully with as much calm and clarity as is possible, because, you know, that's kind of that comes and goes, at least it does in my life, making a decision based on that.
Yeah. And kind of what I was getting at too is sometimes I feel like the struggle of going for something that maybe you have to create on your own seems a little bit easier to do, even though it's harder. And you're more in flow, I suppose, when you see mindfully what the situation is and how you can work toward it and if it makes sense for you. But it's still okay to kind of take those chances and just go with your gut, as opposed to like forcing something that you think you should be doing.
Yeah. You know, I guess there's a couple different paths. One approach can be searching relentlessly for the perfect situation. And there's nothing wrong with that. In my life, it's proven more beneficial to make the best decisions I can at a particular time and then engage fully with wherever I am. So again, I've used this word a few times since we've started speaking, the word acceptance, of like, here's where I am. What am I going to do with this? What can I make of it? How can I succeed in it? But also, as I've gotten older too, I've become far more interested in helping and being of service and not just fulfilling my own needs. It's like, okay, what am I being paid to do? why don't I just do the best job I possibly can in these circumstances? Now, luckily, I should say in all fairness, I've never or rarely been super challenged in that regard. I've never had just a complete shit show of a job. I've been really lucky to work with a lot of great people. But in every situation, there are things that are frustrating or difficult. What you do with it, what I do with it is, to me, what it's all about.
Yeah, I think it's really important when we're making decisions to really see how it affects the big picture outside of ourselves. And, you know, why are we really doing this? Does it feel right? I think that's something that we can kind of get in tune with over time.
Yeah.
Have you actively tried to work toward understanding how you feel about things when you're placed with a decision that you need to make?
Yeah. I mean, in my current life, that's what it's all about, is self-awareness, doing the right things for the right reasons, and understanding what's going on. You know, I find that, I mean, there's really nothing more helpful than going, oh, you know, kind of that external adult observer that they talk about sometimes, to be able to step away a little bit and go, oh, isn't this interesting? Look how incredibly nervous I am about this. Why am I so disproportionately nervous about this? Why am I disproportionately resentful or angry about this thing that's going on? Why am I so unworried about this? And understand that and kind of bring it into, you know, instead of having it affect me in a sub rosa manner, bring it into my consciousness and say, hey, wow, what's going on? What's this all about? Yeah, that's kind of, for me, that's where it's at.
That's really interesting. I love that. It's kind of like, you know, taking a minute to step away and trying to see things a little bit more objectively so that you can really assess what's going on and practice that mindfulness and that self-awareness.
And I should say too, that nothing is more challenging to me in terms of confronting my own like personality quirks and intolerance and impatience and stuff like that. Nothing brings that more to the surface than my work and my marriage. It's like those are the two most prominent things in my life. And that's where I have the most opportunities to understand who I am, what I'm all about, and try to be, boy, this is really getting into hippie territory, try to liberate myself to some degree from being reactionary, from living a reactionary life, and be present for myself and for those around me, and just like enjoy life. It's like, it's COVID. People are dropping dead left, right, and center. It's like, what am I waiting for? What's my problem? It's like, our days are numbered. All of us, I want to enjoy it.
Yeah, definitely. It does. It gives you perspective. So how did you get there? Like, I'm curious, were you always kind of chill and like trying to figure out how to really go with things and not go against them and, you know, and make your life more difficult? Or did you go through that being in your head a lot and being in your body a lot where you were almost forced to start looking at yourself a little bit differently and the way that you handled things?
What's the opposite of chill? That's what I was. As part of, you know, we just, I don't know when this is going to air, but last week was the Event Safety Summit put on by the Event Safety Alliance. And we were having a conversation about the evolution of leadership techniques. And I commented that I'm old enough to remember when being a dick was not only a desirable, but a defensible leadership technique. I mean, being a bully to one level or another, or being condescending, harsh, belittling. It's like, you know, I came up in an era when those things, while they may not have been ubiquitous, it was not uncommon in a way that I would like to believe would never fly now. So no, I was not chill at all. Like I said, I came up in another time, and it's been a slow road to try to become a more, you know, I feel like I keep veering away from music, but I mean, it really all is, it's all integrated, music and life and work. You know, it's been a slow road to become a more integrated and whole and kind and accepting human being. And that translates to work. Now, that alone won't keep my career alive. But that, in conjunction with skills equal to my peers, will allow me to excel. So I think most people that I know, once you reach a certain level in the music business, especially in touring, and you're kind of at whatever level you're at, what sets me aside from my peers? And if the skills are equal. So I think that's what's been helpful to me, is I've had to nurture those other things. I've had to become a more, you know, whole human being that can have a conversation, that can be nice to people, that can be helpful to people.
Tell me about a time when you recognize that you were being a bully.
Well, unfortunately for me, I think most of those realizations came after the fact. I'm very fortunate is that most of the time, although maybe you should ask some of my tour colleagues for confirmation of this, most of the time I keep that stuff in check these days. That isn't to say that it doesn't pop into my head, because it does, but I'm better at taking that moment before I open my mouth and either calm those thoughts or say, yeah, thanks, not interested, and send them away before I engage in that kind of behavior.
But why? Why did you feel the need to do something about it?
Oh, it just became, it's not a pleasant way to live. At least it wasn't for me. You know, it's like, yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I grew up, I evolved. You know, all of us have challenges in our lives, things that change our perspectives, whether it be setbacks or losses or 9/11 or COVID, the loss of a parent, you know, an illness, any number of things that, if we're lucky enough, can just give us a moment, you know, a reset, reset our compass, reset our course. Yeah, I don't think I want to do that anymore. That isn't really working for me anymore.
I do think trauma is definitely a catalyst for change, and it can be a great thing to set us in a motion where we'll end up, hopefully evolving a little bit as people. So here we go to the hippie.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm part again, right?
I'm ready.
No, I really love that. And I think when, you know, in the moment when you're going through really hard stuff, it can be really difficult to see, you know, the quote unquote bright side or the silver lining. And it can be really difficult to get yourself out of those heavy, heavy feelings.
Yeah.
Were there people in your life that you saw go through things that maybe modeled a way for you to deal with these things and learn from them and become a better person because of them?
Yeah, there have been a lot, some big and some small, some professionally and some just more generally in life, to see people around me, friends, being brave, if that's the right word, to engage in difficult conversations about their lives, their past, whatever. We talked a little bit about trauma. One thing that I came to understand is that, this is going to be a generalization, but I think it's true, is that trauma doesn't go away on its own. I mean, you can push it away, and you can push it away for some period of time, but my experience is it'll come back, and it'll come back with both fists swinging. So if you can deal with it before it becomes debilitating, then that's very advantageous, to say the least. So, but to get back to your question, yeah, I've been fortunate enough to have models, to have examples, to have mentors and peers. And sometimes I accept the fact that there's been an amazing amount of good fortune in my professional career, starting with the fact that I'm male and I'm white. And I come from an era where that was even more revered than it is now. And that's big. Beyond that, I've had lots of peers and people who have been examples in my life. Sometimes I think, though, that it's more about the personality. We all have examples around us. Are we able to see them? You know, it's like I've had these great examples and wonderful people that taught me and were able to show me the way or either formally or informally. But also, if your nature is just that you want to, if you're willing and you want to be, you want to be teachable. Can you be teachable? I think that's been really helpful to me.
Yeah, being teachable and I guess getting out of that mindset of I know everything and I'm in charge here and I'm the bully and I have nothing to learn, I think is really valuable. And I think people can get there. I think you just need to have, you just need to want it, even if it's just a little bit. And then it kind of just snowballs, because once you get into that mindset, I think it's really hard to get out of it.
Oh yeah. 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 If you're locked into and it's successful, and I'm putting that in air quotes in some kind of bizarre way, if that leadership style is successful, then yeah, I think people will stick with it. But it's exhausting. Like anything else where you're fronting, when you're just fronting all the time, it's exhausting.
It is. Sometimes I think dealing with people can be exhausting, right? Because mm-hmm. you have to think about the other person. You have to be aware of yourself. You mentioned being aware that maybe you had a head start because you're a white male. And just being aware of that has a big effect in how you deal with other people, because I think you may have a little better of an understanding of the privilege that you've had to get there and the way that you and your interactions with other people can either make things worse or better for them.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think self-awareness is helpful. And I think certainly trying to help other people, I mean, in any way, shape, or form, that's just enriching, whether it's professionally or otherwise.
I think that's something that I've been seeing a lot with a lot of the people that I've had the privilege to talk to in the past few months. I've seen this real need to help other people in a time when a lot of us need help.
It's been so encouraging. It's been really beautiful to see all the great things that my professional colleagues have done. And even just like out on the street in New York, it's like people are just nicer to each other. There's more head nods. There's more eye contact. In traffic, people allow each other to go ahead. Cars stop for pedestrians more regularly. That's been my experience. And it's just been really encouraging. You know, there's a lot of fear and there's a lot of suffering right now and a lot of struggle. And it's just been so cool to see all the mentoring and fundraising and just people making calls. Hey, I haven't spoken to you. How are you doing? And us reminding each other, it's like check in on the people that you don't think you need to check in on. Just all that. It's been really cool. There have been some wonderful and surprising points of kindness through all of this.
Yeah, something I tweeted out the other day was that planting seeds is just doing little acts of kindness regularly. Yeah. And it can mean so much. And I think a lot of times we're stuck in this place where we feel that everything has to be this grand gesture. But I think we've seen now that it's actually the little things and the little bits of connection that you make with people, especially when you're far away, because it's so much more difficult to think about someone when they're not in front of you.
Yeah, it's true. And it's great to challenge myself to do what's necessary, not do what's performative. You know, that's another thing too, especially in an area, in an era of social, when social media is so prevalent, and I've been as guilty of this as anyone, to like do it for the Instagram instead of doing it because it's the right thing to do. And that's not to say that it has to be one or the other. But you know, it's good to interrogate that now and again too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, something that I've been enjoying practicing, and actually I got it from 5-1 because he does it so well. It's kind of like stepping away from the social media and then just shooting a text to someone, you know, just to say hello. I mean, it really is. It's really big. So I had a conversation we did a panel with showmakers recently, and Rob Hallett mentioned the whole bullying aspect, which I thought was interesting that you brought up. He says that one of the big barriers to coming out of this better as an industry is that there are still a lot of bullies out there, and that's, you know, that's something that's standing in the way. What are your thoughts on that?
I have to be really honest. I don't see it. I'm not suggesting for a minute that it doesn't exist, especially somebody as knowledgeable as Rob to say that. But I live in a very rarefied little place where I have a couple of clients that I tour with. They're all grown-ups. The managers are grown-ups. Everybody's mature. There aren't rampant substance abuse issues. There aren't out-of-control egos. So I might not be the best person to answer that question because I'm just lucky not to encounter it.
Well, and that actually brings something great up. Let's think about the way that we feel when we are in these difficult situations, right? We feel like we're alone and there's no alternative out there. And that's when a lot of people, especially people that I've spoken to that have considered leaving the industry, they have felt in a place where they just didn't see much hope, right? There was no light at the end of the tunnel. There was no silver lining. They felt like they were just in this little, you know, corner alone. But I think knowing and talking about openly about your positive experiences can really be that little bit of hope that people need, because I really do think that those personal stories about how things can work out and things can be different and it doesn't always have to be the way you see it is really valuable.
What a year, right? I mean, if you contemplate the Black Lives Matter movement, the Me Too movement, COVID, the election. And by the way, I'm saying all of these as positives, not as negatives. I mean, they've been tremendously challenging, and for some more than others. But it's the only year like this that I've certainly ever experienced, where so much is being brought and has been brought to the surface about societal inequities, gender disparity, wealth disparity. It would be easy, and I can certainly understand why there is hopelessness, for very, very good reason. I wouldn't begrudge anybody for just wanting to roll up in a ball on the floor, but there are also great opportunities at this point. A lot of a very rare opportunity for kind of a big step forward in society. And of course, that means our industry as well.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see that as well. And I think it's important to point out, you know, like you said, we wouldn't blame anyone if they felt horrible about, you know, a lot of the things that are happening. And I think it's really important to sit in your feelings. I mean, I remember at the beginning, you know, like back in March, nothing had really hit me personally. I mean, my mom's a waitress and that obviously freaked me out immediately because I was like, oh my gosh. But But for me personally, you know, I was in a great situation. I got to work from home. Everything was great for me. And I was still, I would catch myself every so often, like literally, like just crying. Like I lost it a couple times out of nowhere when I thought that I was fine. And something that helped me get through it was that I allowed myself to feel that way. And I don't think the first time I was able to not feel guilty about it, but I think the second time and the third time and like the fourth time that I cried, part of what I started, I guess, separating myself from was the guilt that I was feeling, because a lot of it was seeing that there was so much pain and there was so many bad things that were happening and people were going through things. And I wanted so much to do something and to fix something and to help someone. But then when I started to realize, you know, you can help the way that you can help. And as long as you do what's within your ability, no matter how small it is, and it goes back to those small gestures that we're talking about, even things like that. And if you just make that a habit, it actually helps you kind of deal with the guilt of not suffering along with everyone for every single second.
That's really great advice. I mean, for me, one of the things that's been super helpful about this period is that, again, because of the nature of my work, of being in a position where I just solve problems and remain calm, that means that just by definition, subverting my feelings is kind of comes with the territory, and remaining calm when I'm not calm is what I'm paid to do. So to have an opportunity to divest myself from that and not have to be in this constant state of hypervigilance and being forever contemplating, is there anything left to do? Should I make this other call? Are they going to do what they said they would do? The hotel, the airline, you know, a million things that I deal with every day. It's been a real great opportunity to like, oh yeah, I don't have to do that. I can feel however I feel in a given moment, and that's not going to be a problem. So that's been really cool. I'm very unused to it. It was very uncomfortable at first. It's like, what in the world is going on? Oh, I'm feeling my feelings. How about that?
feelings are feelings, and they're definitely
I hate them.
It's sometimes it's I mean, and isn't that why, you know, so many, I mean, look at how much people were drinking, especially like at the beginning of the pandemic. I mean, I personally was having wine in the middle of the day, like all the time, and I know a lot of people were. I mean, alcohol sales went up exponentially, I think, just as much as, you know, infections went up. But isn't it nice to kind of, because I did that and then I was able to not do it so much.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then you kind of do have to deal with your feelings, but you're so right. It's incredibly uncomfortable.
Yeah. It can be really new and shocking. All of it. I mean, there's just been so much of it. What a time. Holy crap.
Yeah. We're living through quite a thing. So let's talk a little bit about you said you're married, right?
Yeah.
So how has it been being at home and getting to know your wife at a whole new level, I think, right? Being quarantined?
It's been great. And I can't tell you how, you know, happy, blessed, relieved, whatever, you know, however you want to couch it. It's been really great because I know so many people, quite frankly, that's not the deal. For years, when people asked, because my wife and I do get along really well, when people, you know, if it came up, not so much like secret of your success, because it's not, you know, that kind of model relationship, but I always felt that one of the things that was helpful is that we were apart a lot. And so we had an opportunity to reset and to appreciate each other. And absence truly does make the heart grow fonder. And I kind of thought that was at the, you know, that was like a big component. And it's been really, really cool. It's like, I could do this. I could continue to do this. If I won the lottery, I probably would continue to do this. It's like, I'm very happy being at home with my wife and doing all the stuff that we do. And plus, like I said, once I got past the, I'm going to sit here and twiddle my thumbs and wait till I can go back to work phase, and into the, I'm going to do some positive stuff phase, whether it be the Buddhist study group that I took, or my OSHA 30 certification, or the book group that I'm participating in, and the exercise that I would never be doing if I was, you know, in the middle of touring. It's like, it's just been great.
What have you discovered about yourself?
I think part of growth is becoming aware. Part of my growth has been becoming aware of my shortcomings and wanting to acknowledge them and work on them, whatever that might mean. And I think that's great. And I think it's admirable, not for me, I mean, but for anybody to say, okay, I'm really going to take a long, hard look at who I am and what I'm all about and what might not be desirable in the way I interact. And this might sound really weird, but what has come around during this period has been a little bit more of like, you know, I'm not so bad. There are things that I have to offer, that I can offer, that I'm willing to offer. So I know it sounds, I mean, it makes me uncomfortable to even say, because I've been taught that humility is a not only an admirable trait, but a helpful trait. It's like, my life will be easier if I'm humble. But it's been really great to like kind of see a little bit more clearly who I really am. It's like, yeah, I got shit I need to work on for sure. But you know what? It's not like I do some stuff okay. I have good days. I'm able to be of help. And that feels great.
Yeah, I think we need to start giving ourselves a little bit more credit, don't you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what I mean, to kind of come back around to that whole thing of like, if somebody is just like sat in front of the TV for the past 10 months and is put on 20 pounds and eats ice cream all days long, God bless. It's like, if that's what got you through, for real, I got nothing to say about it. It's like, do what you need to do. Take care of yourself. So yeah, I think we all deserve credit for going through a situation that none of us, you know, there's so much powerlessness and so much uncertainty and financial pressure and personal, I mean, just all of it. Chimney, the list goes on and on and on. So whatever folks are doing, hopefully as in as a healthy manner as they possibly can. But whatever anybody is doing to get over, right on.
Yeah, providing people that acknowledgement is, I think it's huge. I did a coaching call with, it was my friend Adam. He was training to be a life coach. And so he coached me once, and then I volunteered to do it for another coach. And what they ended the sessions with was really beautiful. They asked, what is something that you would like acknowledgement for? And that question was really incredible, because then, you know, they follow it up with taking everything that they heard from the session and saying it back to you out loud about all of these great things that they've seen from that session. And it feels so good to just hear it.
That's great. That's great. Super helpful.
And I think it's something that we can definitely put into place when we help people, when we reach out to them. Try to acknowledge other people, but also do it to yourself, right? Acknowledge yourself for the way that you're handling things. It's been hard. Like, we're doing, just surviving right now is an accomplishment.
Absolutely. And I think it's, again, maybe I'm speculating or projecting, because it's tricky for me, but to like really understand the lay of the land and remain right-sized and understand what I am and what I am not and what my strengths are and what the things that could use some work on, that's helpful and important, and that's where I'm at.
I love that so much. Well, Paul, I would like to know, you've been around, you've done some great stuff, you know some cool people, you've had some great experiences. So I take it that you get a lot of questions. What's one of those questions that you get very frequently that you think is really significant and you love when people ask you that question?
A question that comes up that I like talking about is the things that are less about the technical aspects of what I do. Although I can geek out about show settlements and ticket manifests and what hotels we like or don't like, bus companies, vendors, I can do all that, and that's great. But I really like and enjoy talking more about some of the things that we've talked about. Again, to go back to that analogy or the metaphor that I gave before, or the example, I guess, I'm just like, yeah, develop your core skills that are going to help move you down your path, whether you're a tour manager, a production manager, an artist, a lighting designer, you know, whatever it is. Absolutely. Stay focused on that stuff. But understand I like to be aware of and understand how the broader life issues come into play in our work. Acceptance of others, acceptance of circumstances as they are, remaining calm, accepting challenges, seeing challenges as opportunities, things like that. Too vague?
No, I mean, that really speaks to the whole human element of the whole thing, because a lot of us define ourselves at different points in our lives, or some people forever, is with what you do, like what it is that you do, your career. That's who you are.
Yeah. That's been a big COVID dilemma too. I can't tell you how many conversations I've had with friends. It's like, you know, if I'm not a tour manager, who am I? And I am not a tour manager right now. It's like, I've been on Master Tour like 30 minutes in the past 12 months. So it poses some real, like, existential questions about who we are when we aren't our job.
And we're not. I don't think we ever really are. I think it keeps us from really taking the time to see it, because our jobs tend to keep us busy. And, you know, like you said, with every challenge, I think there's a great opportunity. And I think from all of these things, I think it's going to put us in a much better place to really see our teams through, and to see our peers and our coworkers through whatever happens next time. And I think we'll be much better equipped because we've had that time to really kind of get to know the nitty gritty of who we are.
Absolutely. And at the same time, I just want to keep reminding myself when we go back to work that a lot of people are coming in, myself included, out of practice. Some of us have suffered tremendous loss around us. Some of us have gone through months and months of like really intense financial anxiety or whatever. So I want to remember that too. It's like, I want it to be business as usual, but I don't want it to be business as usual. I want it to be some new version of what we do and how we do it, where it is business. It's not, you know, it's not all touchy-feely, but I definitely want to make sure that there's room in our work and in our lives to, you know, again, not to sound goofy, but to take care of each other.
I absolutely agree. And you're not the only one, which is great, because I think that the more people that have that mentality and that want that to happen, the more that it'll actually come to fruition.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Paul. It was so great talking to you and getting to know you a little bit. And have a great night. We'll talk soon.
Thanks. It was a real pleasure. You're really great at your job. So it was a very easy and pleasant conversation.
Thank you.
Welcome.
All right. Talk soon. Here are some key takeaways from my conversation with Paul Dalen. 1. Your fears and anxieties are valid, but remember that our perception of the challenges we're faced with are where our power lies. Even in the darkest of times, there really is opportunity. 2. Practice being teachable. Being teachable starts with being aware of who you are, where you come from, and where you stand. It means recognizing your privilege or lack thereof, and how it frames your interactions with those around you. And 3, remember to always give yourself credit. Acknowledge yourself for how well you're doing. Acknowledge the road you've walked and all of the things that you've learned along the way. Then remember to pay it forward so that you can be, for someone else, one of the amazing humans who have inspired you and encouraged you along the way. Thank you so much for joining us on the Tour Life podcast. Be sure to give Paul a follow on Instagram at RealRealPaulDalen. And don't forget to like, subscribe, leave a review on iTunes, and to follow the Tour Life on Instagram at the Tour Life podcast.